I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust 2023 wrap, where we will look over the achievements and the challenges and all in between for the Supporters Trust. This is Brendan, the host of the Cheeseman podcast. This is going out on our feed as well, so our listeners can sort of get an insight into the work that the Trust does and their communication with the club. We're joined, first of all, by Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm very good, thanks, Brendan. Thanks very much for hosting this for us.
Oh, honoured, mate. Honoured. No. Also joined by Rachel. How are you doing, Rachel?
Hello. Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. Great to see you again across the Atlantic. Isn't it?
It is the Atlantic. Yeah, I'm literally right beside the Atlantic. The Atlantic is just there. Like, the part of Brazil I live in is called the Mata Atlântico. So the Atlantic rainforest. Let's go with that. Also joined by Steve. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing very well, Brendan. Thanks very much for hosting us tonight. Been looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's honoured to be here. So obviously, Martin, Steve and Rachel are all board members of the Trust. So we are here to discuss the year behind. And we'll go into a bit about the club as well, about the current state of play, because you've got a nice sort of warm, fuzzy feeling about the club at the moment. And so it's good to talk about it. So let's crack into it. We do have a sort of running order here, which I'll go through. This is to Martin. Is the change of personnel at the Trust and at the club. And yeah, so Martin, if you want to go into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has been, 2023 was a challenging year for us, I think it's fair to say. We had a couple of resignations, Anth and Simon stepping down. So there was, obviously we're a team of volunteers and we need everybody. We need as many hands as we can get a lot of the time. So when we lose people, it is difficult for us, and they go with our best wishes to both hardworking and diligent members of the board. We wish them well. And obviously, this time, coming up to the AGM last year, Steve and Rachel were co-chairs, but then the fan advisory board sort of came along, and Steve and Rachel were elected by Spurs Supporters Trust board members, us as a board, to be our fan advisory board members. So they went and did that, but it was a huge amount of work. So we decided to change from co-chairs, which Steve and Rachel were, for me to be chair, just to share the workload, really. And I guess we're in a state now, I think, where we've got some stability. I think, do you think, Steve and Rachel, it's been almost, it would be like when Steve and Rachel were co-chairs at the beginning, we had stability then, and then the Fab sort of came along, and then we had, for various reasons, people coming and going, and it kind of went into a state of flux, and we came back. So now we're sort of one board. We're fully committed to the challenges of supporter trust movement issues, and I think we're in a state where we've got our representatives on the fan advisory board who represent the trust. They also sit on the Fab. They report back to us as a trust board. We've got our trust board members, our secretary, our treasurer, our chairs, and our different areas of work. So we're all pulling in the same direction, and it's been, I think the last few months have been really positive, and we've got some bits and pieces which we'll talk about later on in this this pod that we're really excited about, and I think we're looking forward to taking on 2024 and seeing what we can achieve.
Fantastic. 2023 also was the year where we sadly lost one of our own, Pete Hain. Sorry to go left field on this, but I want to come to you, Rachel, because we haven't spoken about this since it happened. Pete was pure Tottenham. The work he did behind the scenes for the trust and for the club and for the community really isn't known. So don't know. Do you have a couple of minutes to talk about Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, unbelievably, we lost Pete Hain, and we also lost Kevin Fitzgerald in the same year, both very recently board members of the trust, which, you know, takes a huge toll emotionally. Both of them were really the finest men, honestly, just beautiful people. I'm so glad if for nothing else, there are loads of other reasons, but I'm so glad I joined the trust because I got to meet them. They, you know, they really were fabulous people, and they both were in the supporter movement for the right reasons. They really cared passionately about normal Spurs fans, and they were in it because they wanted to make things easier and better and to protect their issues. But they were also very, very community-led and very much into supporting various charities. So Kevin, for example, was absolutely fundamental in the Cycling to Amsterdam movement, where we raised loads of money, absolutely thousands and thousands. I think it was about 100,000 in the end.
Wow.
Through sponsored cycle riding to Amsterdam, along with other football clubs as well, but the Spurs part raised about 100,000, and various other things. So Kevin was the one who set up the quiz nights, which I've sort of taken on with Rob. But you know, huge footsteps to fill. And Pete was our secretary, but also, you know, he did lots and lots of work with other groups in the community, especially the food banks. And so, you know, it's really important to us that we continue their work, because we know that, well, you know, we do know for sure that they wanted that to continue. And, you know, it's really important. So we will be continuing to promote that. And some of the events that we'll be talking about later, we'll be raising money for their charities then. So, yeah, thank you for raising that, Brendan, because, you know, they are still with us.
Absolutely, always. The next point to in this summary of 2023 is the Fan Advisory Board. Steve, you are elected to give a summary how it's gone. I know this is something that the Supporters Trust have advocated for a long time, more fan engagement with the club. So how has it been? How do you think it's gone so far?
I think it's been a positive start. There have been challenges. There have been challenges right from the very beginning of the Fan Advisory Board. But I think, scrolling back a bit, you're quite right to mention this is something the Trust has been arguing for a long time across football generally and Spurs in particular, which is that supporters should have a constitutional voice within the club, within the governance structure, not just something that is an option for the club, but it's actually something they're required to do. And obviously, it stemmed from the fallout from the European Super League. We as a trust then gave, we made representations to the club, but also we gave evidence to the government's fan-led review into football governance, arguing very strongly for fan advisory boards and for their powers. And we then, as a trust, took a leading role in the negotiations with the club over about an 18-month period to get the fan advisory board in place, which we were very pleased to achieve. We didn't get absolutely everything we wanted, but we thought we made quite a few improvements in the process throughout those quite tough negotiations with positive engagement. And we've got the Fan Advisory Board now. There's two trust representatives out of the 10 fan representatives. There's also representatives from the Proud Lady Whites, from Spurs Reach, from Spurs Ability, and elected representatives from men's season ticket holders of the women's team, Spurs, One Hotspur members, and official supporters clubs, both domestic and overseas. And I think actually one thing I would say, one of the most positive things actually, is that that group has worked very well as a team from the very beginning. And there's been no suggestion of division, within that group, and there's been no suggestion of division between that group and, say, for example, the trust position on a number of issues, for example, on ticketing and ticket pricing and so forth. So it's added to and complemented the work of the trust. The FAB has got a specific remit, and I'm slightly looking here at my list to make sure I don't miss things out, but it's the club's strategic vision and objectives, off-pitch performance updates, priorities and plans, operational match day issues, proposals relating to significant changes to club heritage assets, by which we mean the stadium issues and colours and badge and so forth, equality, diversity and inclusion commitments, and plans for broader supporter engagement. So that's within the trust, the FAB's remit, and the trust carries on with its remit on things like ticketing, on policing and safety, on match day experience, on safeguarding, transport and so forth, as well as broader fan engagement. So it meshes together quite well. Mm. And, you know, we've been looking at other fan advisory boards, the arrangements with other clubs as well, and also the Premier League fan engagement standard. And it's important to say, I think, that the Spurs arrangement matches and in places exceeds the Premier League's fan engagement standard. And so specifically, the co-chair elected by the FAB from amongst supporters, which is Chris Parros from the Proud Lilywhites, she attends 4 club board meetings per year. And that's something which other fan advisory boards don't have. And Chris can then make sure our views...
That's separate from the fan advisory board. So she's on the board?
Yes. So in her capacity as the co-chair of the fan advisory board, elected by us, she attends 4 meetings of the Tottenham Hotspur Football and Athletic Company Limited Board per year, okay, and has a voice at those meetings, can represent our views. Also, obviously, her presence influences what's discussed, and she mm-hmm. can report back to us, limited to what can be reported publicly, but obviously she can... feedback to us as well. And actually, in a number of fan advisory boards, the co-chair or the chairs of the fan advisory board are appointed by the club. So the fact that ours is elected by the fan advisory board is a positive. We've got 4 meetings a year where a number of fan advisory boards only have 2. There are some fan advisory boards or equivalent where all members are actually appointed by the club rather than elected by supporters or nominated by organisations. our remit includes broader issues like sponsorship, for example, and partnership arrangements and so forth, which other arrangements that other clubs don't have. Now, it's not all plain sailing because, you know, the club is obliged to consult us, but it's not obliged to agree with us. And obviously, we've had disagreements. Sure. With the club over the ticket pricing, which the trust also raises objections to, over the link up with Socios, the organisation linked in with cryptocurrency. I know exactly which we registered our disagreement as a FAB unanimously, and the club went ahead. Now, it's not obliged to agree with us, but you know, we made our views known, and that was recorded in the minutes, and I think we are getting those points across. And it is, we had a presentation at the initial meeting from Daniel Levy and other directors on the club's strategic direction and on a number of issues around finance and the like, some of which was then fed into the question and answer session, which Daniel Levy and others did with fans in September. But I think it is very important that we hear direct from the club on those issues, but also we can represent the fans and put our points of view across. And we're keen. Yeah, there's lots of things to discuss in the meetings that we have. And we do run through some points which are relatively short, but it's the longer discussions on the really bigger issues around strategic matters that I think are fundamentally important. And we've got another meeting coming up next month, 19th of mm-hmm. February, where we'll be again addressing with the club some of those really major concerns and issues that affect all supporters.
That's great. That's the thing about how it was designed was that, like you said at the beginning, there's different factions that have a voice at the table. So from my side, I'm chair of Brazil Spurs Bahia. And so as a group of chairs of overseas supporters clubs, we have our own sort of needs and concerns. And so Chuck from Austin Spurs is our representative, and he's doing really well. He is reporting back. He is putting our case together. He is getting voices together to bring to the club. So it's from that aspect.
And he's getting up at 5 in the morning to attend the meetings as well. So he's certainly putting your point of view across.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the fact that, Rachel, when we've been on before, you've said that a key thing with the fan advisory board was that someone external would be part of the board meeting. So Chris Powers has achieved that to a degree then?
Yep, for 4 meetings a year, yeah, which is a really good achievement.
That's news to me. That's brilliant. That is great to hear. So the next point is for you, Rachel, is about the Football Supporters Association. Are we done with the FAB, Steve? Sorry, before I moved on.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think so. Unless there was anything else you wanted to ask about it. Yeah, that was all I wanted to cover at this point.
Yeah, no, for my end, that's, that covers everything. It's good to hear that. And that like you said, that we have a better sort of a structure than other teams do have with their fan advisory boards. The fact that, like you said, it's elected by supporters, not by the club. So, let's keep it going. Like I said, there's always work to do. Rachel, so with the Football Supporters Association, there's this sort of discussions around VAR and fixture scheduling. So what's been the developments there?
Well, just to clarify for anyone who doesn't know, the FSA is the Football Supporters Association, which is basically a network, formal network for all the trusts and other sort of formally constituted supporter groups. And it's, you know, there are certain things that everybody sort of feels strongly about, but you can't achieve if you're all working on your own in little sections just with your club. So, for example, one of the most famous ones, achievements that the FSA managed to do through us all working together and applying so much pressure, was capping the away ticket pricing. Because I don't know if you remember, it was going through the roof. It was particularly our friends down the road who were known for their, you know, it was sort of like £70 each, I think, at one point. So it's those kind of things where everybody works together that you can achieve great outcomes. There's lots of different areas that the FSA are working on with us and other clubs this year. I think the three that sort of jump out at me are VAR, fixture scheduling for television, and to a lesser degree, but just as importantly, making stadia accessible for all, particularly women. And there is a lot of initiatives that are coming up about making it a safer, more inclusive game for women supporters in the men's game as well as the women's game. But with VAR particularly, it's really interesting because right at the beginning when it was brought in, Martin actually was one of the people who went to Stockley Park. And on our website, you can see a really excellent report that Martin made. This is why I'm saying this and not Martin, because he couldn't say how brilliant.
Thanks, Rachel.
but it is. And it used to get quoted by other supporters' trusts, actually, with gritted teeth. And it shows what the basic tenet of VAR was meant to be. And there were several things that they said, including if the game has to change in order to accommodate VAR, then we've failed. So in other words, if any rules have to be changed or clarified because of VAR, then it's something's gone wrong. If the game is severely interrupted, then something has gone wrong. If the referee's integrity is blown out of the water, then the game's gone wrong. And really, I think we can all agree that with all of those things, the game has gone wrong. So when we are lobbying about VAR, we are considering all of those things, but we are particularly also considering the impact of supporters in the stadium. And because I think if you take sort of like, oh, that decision went against us and that decision went against Liverpool, and so we want a replay or whatever, you know, that's not how you make change. Change is about things that we can all agree on that are against the interests of the game. So the two games I would pick out this season where that was really striking was Liverpool, and Chelsea. And the Liverpool one, there were times, I mean, I tweeted during the game, has anyone got a clue what is going on? Because we had so much time where we in the stadium had no idea. Some of the time it said there was a VAR check going on. Other times it was just the ref standing there with his finger in his ear. And nobody knew what was being checked, why, and whether things were right or whatever. And obviously the way it all went was pretty disastrous. But the Liverpool game, I mean, obviously we only heard later what a car crash the whole thing was. But we'd had a decision and it did say there was a VAR check. We then carried on playing. And then about for 90 seconds, 2 minutes more, there was still a sign up saying there was a VAR check going on while we were playing the game. So nobody had, you know, again, nobody has a clue. And the other thing is that when you're in the stadium, you normally find out what the result of the VAR is by listening to an away group or some group of fans who've got their Sky app on and hear it through watching it on the television before we hear it in the stadium. And all of these things are just utterly ridiculous. Now, I went to a meeting at the Premier League earlier this year with Howard Webb, when he had just taken over, and he was saying about how he was going to hold his hand up if anything went wrong, how positive he was about how this could move forward. And I think his hand got tired in the end, being held up so many times, saying that it had all gone wrong. And people were saying, look, we don't want a phone call from Howard Webb. We know it's gone wrong. So in the end, what they've agreed is that the FSA are sending a delegation to Stockley Park and to meet with the VAR officials and to present feedback from all the clubs about where it's gone wrong. And then the PGMOL are going to be meeting with each club's trust. So we'll have a meeting where we'll be able to go through our particular examples. And, you know, you'd like to think that it will end up with some sensible decisions being made. But I think one of the issues, of course, is that nobody... In many areas, we don't know what the rules are anymore, and either do the pundits, and I'm not sure that the footballers do either, because it keeps changing, and the handball in particular is so ridiculous. You know, it is really spoiling the game. So that's VAR. Fixture scheduling, I'm on my big moan here, aren't I? But basically, again, there are so many examples of where supporters' interests are not paramount when the decisions are being made. And on the fan advisory board, we lobby the club very hard to say, you know, please bear us in mind and put us at the forefront when you're making these decisions. And so, for example, don't put us on a Friday night against Burnley because you've given us we've got the concessionary ticket price for the Burnley game so that the children can come, but it's now on a 8 o'clock on a Friday night. Oh, was it a Monday night or a Friday night?
Friday.
Yeah. So it was half term, so local children would be able to get here, but, you know, it's so unrealistic that someone's going to bring their family from Yorkshire or whatever, and it's kind of the game that everyone is rooting for, isn't it? The FA Cup at home, we can bring the kids. But TV scheduling, I mean, admittedly, in that one, it was because there were so many games in London that weekend. But, you know, it was kind of that Balotelli's sort of why always us. But it's the erosion of the week and the fact that nobody knows when you can actually organise anything else in your life. Because, you know, we thought that there wouldn't be, you know, obviously we haven't got Europe this season, so we thought there wouldn't be any European game or matches on Thursdays. So if I'm going to book to go and see a friend or go to the theatre or cinema or something, Thursday night could be good. No, you know, nothing is sacred. And it's the constant erosion. There was a Christmas Eve game this season. Not for
Chelsea. Was it Chelsea? I think it was.
Yeah. Chelsea were away. I think it was at Aston Villa.
Wolves.
Wolves, Midlands. Okay, close. Thank you. But, you know, Christmas Eve is not the same as Boxing Day. Can you imagine? You know, Christmas Eve, we've got things that we need to be doing. And, you know, this is just not, it's not okay. And it's not about us here in England, is it? It's about televising, maximising income and selling it to overseas markets. But of course, without people in the stadium, we all know football is nothing. So again, it's working together to try and put a stop to these things before they start.
Just thought, so my kids came in earlier, so that's why my internet went funny and I went a bit quiet there. I think on VAR, I think we're all on the same page as fans. I think even pundits as well, where it's just destroying the fan experience at the game, the waits, the delays, and it's leading to injuries as well. Now we saw with Van der Ven, that hamstring injury would not have happened if we weren't sitting around for 20 minutes to decide that Christian Romero deserved a red card. These things matter. The delays in getting decisions is key, and that's something that you'd hope that they would want to address. And for the scheduling, look, I mean, you're totally right. It's I'm out here in Brazil. I'm lucky I get to see any game I want to because I have the app. Any 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, no issues. And that's where we did the legacy fans. And I've forgotten what the overseas ones. What the overseas ones? Modern fans, is it? Because the two types that they said. But yeah, and so they're caring more about people overseas that generate the advertising revenue for the Premier League and for the clubs. Yeah. And there has to be a line drawn. It's simple. It cannot go on. And on, as you were saying, with the scheduling as well, just the numbers of games that are being played as well. And that's a separate issue, I guess, from what we're talking about.
Yeah, it all counts. And that is why, because there are so many games, they're sort of like, they're then overlapping with each other. So games are getting reorganised for television, then they're getting reorganised again. So, you know, quite a lot of games, not particularly Spurs last season, but other clubs too, get changed twice. And sometimes people don't know until like 5 days before what time the kickoff's going to be. You know, it's just unacceptable.
Yeah. The City game, well, just on a side note, but selfishly, is it on the Saturday? Is it going to be on the? Do we know yet? Has it been scheduled yet?
Well,
I think the other point that Rachel makes, which is a very good one, is, you know, people talk about the inconvenience to away fans, for example, of a game against Burnley on a Friday night. Well, you know, long gone are the days that all Spurs fans live around the corner from the stadium. Many home fans are travelling long distances to go to the game as well. So they're equally impacted by games that are moved to that time of night. And back linking in with VAR, if you've got a game like that Chelsea game, which seemed to go on forever, you know, it didn't finish until, what was it, 10:15 or something? And you've got other games which are 8:15 kickoffs. It makes it very difficult, even for people who are travelling within London, to get home after those games. So it really does inconvenience the match-going fan. And none of us are saying that we don't think Spurs should be on television. And we appreciate there are many Spurs supporters who can't get to games, either for reasons of finance or geography or time or whatever. And it's great that they can watch the club on TV. But that shouldn't be at the expense, at the cost of match-going fans.
Yeah. Has there been any comeback from the club? Has there been any? Well, it's not really a club decision, I guess. It's an FA decision.
Well, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? And the club will say, well, look, it's down to the broadcasters. And of course, technically, that is correct. But there's just been this renegotiation of the broadcast rights for the next contract. And I don't get the impression, I put it no higher than that, that the clubs have managed to claw back any extra leverage on defending against games being moved. We raised this issue because there had been stuff in the press about the possibility of a 6:30 p.m. on a Sunday slot for games, and the club's response is that they hadn't heard any suggestion of that. So we're taking that as hopefully meaning that isn't on the cards. But there is a concern. If you look at the situation in Spain, in La Liga, for example, every single game kicks off at a different time, so they can spread it out from a Friday night to a Monday evening, with games late on a Saturday night and late on a Sunday evening. And we don't want to end up in that position.
And so the Super Cup,
Yeah. So I was just going to say, from the club's perspective, things that they do, you know, that we've asked for, lobbied for, and have got some results on, is that they are very good at providing discounted coach travel for away games where you can't get back because it's you know, after a certain time away. They are looking at setting up a group to support women travelling back late at night, where there's a WhatsApp network that people can use. So that's something that's in the pipelines and has been brought in by some other clubs, Brentford in particular, and that's through the FSA as well. So, you know, there are some things, but these are all the little twiddly bits around the edge. The main thing is the scheduling in the first place.
I think just on that as well, just as a, with the next deal, you'd hope as well, remembering this is the FA Cup, it's the FA Cup. So, you know, we remember third round of the FA Cup, 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That's my memory of it. And I think given that it's the Football Association's main, you know, the emphasis they put on the FA Cup as its big iconic trophy, they could easily insert something, a clause where they say if a team has had to play you know, an antisocial, a game in an antisocial time, which I would say Friday, Monday, Tuesday night, as Manchester United and us, I can't remember who played on Monday
or Thursday,
or Thursday, they cannot then be selected to play an evening kickoff for the next two rounds. So if you play on a Friday night on the third round, you should be playing on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon for the fourth and fifth round. Yeah, because it doesn't mean they're not going to be on TV. It doesn't mean you can't televise those games. It just means you're giving supporters a break. Because as Steve mentioned, we've had the Chelsea game on a Monday night going on for near enough half an hour after the game. We've then had a series of other midweek games. We had Bournemouth on New Year's Eve, which was personally a pain for me. Not that that matters, but, you know, just saying. And then we had the Burnley game on a Friday night. And now we don't know when the Man City game is going to be. But if it is also at a time where, you know, you'd hope it would be at a reasonable time. But you've got to eventually somebody with some responsibility, someone has to take responsibility, like the FA and the Premier League. They're the ones who are giving these contracts away and these deals away. They need to step in and say, we're going to protect our competition, and we're going to, if they care about supporters as much as they say they do, insert a clause which protects supporters from these ludicrous times, because no one wants to be kicking off. But and what's with the 8:15 and the 8:30 kickoffs as well? What's wrong with 8 till 7:45? Ridiculous. Where did they come from?
But especially with the extra time that's been added now as well, like because of the changing in the rules. Like if you'd be there till nearly 11 o'clock, it'd be like Spain. I was going to say earlier, like with Spain, that the Super Cup is being played in Saudi Arabia. Like Atletico and Real Madrid have just travelled out there, and it's where this looks like it's going. It's where you can sort of see where priorities lie.
If ITV don't want to put Coronation Street in Emmerdale half an hour earlier to show football, then don't show football on a night when you've got Coronation Street in Emmerdale, would be my advice to them.
Well, we touched on it earlier, Steve, about the recent judgment by the European courts with relation to the Super League. Obviously, it wasn't great news. I mean, because you can sort of see this two ways, but for me as a fan, I'm not a huge fan of FIFA and UEFA. As I'm sure you guys have issues with them as well, but they're kind of what we have. And the fear from supporters was that this Super League is a threat to the football pyramid. Has anything changed to make you think that maybe it's not, that maybe this, what they have planned can work? What did you make of the judgment?
Well, the threat hasn't gone away, but equally, the European Court decision doesn't mean that the Super League is back on. It doesn't mean that the Super League has been vindicated or supported by the European Courts. Now, as you rightly say, FIFA, we wouldn't want to as it were, promoting and defending FIFA and UEFA for all their good works, because they do a lot of damage. I mean, World Cups in Qatar and Saudi Arabia being a case in point, and also the frankly bonkers changes that UEFA has made to the Champions League format from next season. So they don't get everything right by any means. But they are the official bodies which recognise competitions. What the European Court said was that they are essentially private enterprises. They're not government organisations or quangos. They are private enterprises. And they have a dominant market position. They're effectively monopolies, and they're in an odd position of being the regulators for football within their jurisdictions. But at the same time, they have the exclusive right to market the television rights and media rights in that product. So they've got it both ways, if you like. That was why the European Court said they had a dominant position and that they were abusing that position by imposing sanctions without clearly established criteria or without fair and transparent procedures. So that was the detail of it, if you like. Now, since those sanctions were first imposed back in 2021, UEFA themselves have tightened their rules and now have procedures in place. UEFA say they're confident that they could now act in the way that the European Court wasn't happy with. But from a English or England Wales perspective, firstly, and regrettably, in my view, we're no longer in the EU, so we're not directly affected by the judgment in quite the same way. But secondly, the Premier League has in its rules a specific prohibition on clubs even talking about forming or joining breakaway leagues. Sanctions if they do. And also the government is going to legislate to introduce an independent regulator for football. Now, we're not precisely sure when that legislation is going to come forward, hopefully soon. It may be affected by the timing of the general election, but given that the Labour opposition is committed to it as well, and indeed to an even stronger regulator, I think it will happen. And that regulator will also have the power to stop breakaway leagues and to stop people from trying to undermine the existing competition. So I think in that sense, there are mechanisms in place to stop it happening. And so the threat isn't imminent and the threat isn't reinstated by this judgment. But it's the power of clubs. And it was that power of clubs that led to the Premier League in the first place, which itself, of course, was a breakaway league, although it was eventually reluctantly sanctioned by the Football Association, who had little choice otherwise. And it's interesting that the statement by Spurs and by the other clubs who've been involved in the attempted breakaway league before referred specifically to the European Clubs Association. And it's clear that that organisation of the major clubs across Europe has a lot of power and influence. And of course, they've got more money and clout combined than UEFA has, probably not necessarily than FIFA has, but they could exert a lot of influence. And I think it's really just a question of remaining eternally vigilant. It was fan power harnessed last time that stopped it. It was very encouraging to see what Ange Postecoglou had to say about the power of fans and the voice of fans and the effect of it, and that clubs and leagues and governing bodies shouldn't just pay lip service to fans of the lifeblood. They need to actually engage with the fans, not just make decisions in isolation. And consider what they want. And I think there is the point that you've made already, which is, can you believe we would say this? There is significant danger of there just being too much football. If you add in a 48-team World Cup, World Club Championship, different tournaments taking part, which cut across the domestic league season in many continents, it just becomes unsustainable. Fans can't get to games. Players are getting injuries more and more frequently, and it just isn't sustainable. It is a classic case of potentially killing the golden goose.
It's a funny one. The Club World Cup, I think it's still called that. The proposed changes there, you can see it kind of both ways, because it's the only chance where teams from smaller countries can measure themselves against the existing Super League, i.e. the Premier League and the big leagues in Europe. So expanding that and sort of helping leagues in poorer countries, in countries that aren't really a focus but love the game. So you can sort of see that side. But then again, like you said, there's still just it is, and I know that's not what FIFA are doing it for, obviously. It's money. but it's also...
And they're very keen, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, to play as many games as they can in Saudi Arabia or in Gulf states for reasons of finance as well. And the problem is you get an increasing number of games that are comparatively meaningless and the fans aren't particularly interested in. And what the great thing about the Champions League, I mean, it's obviously painful when you don't qualify, but that means it's great when you do. And then you have the excitement of you've qualified, so that's a big thing in itself. Who are you going to get in the draw? Which teams are you going to play? And fans don't necessarily want to be playing a midweek game every week in some league structure against a team from Europe. They'd rather be playing Premier League teams on a regular basis. I mean, people talk about Wet Tuesdays in Stoke or whatever, but that is what makes the league work. That's what it thrives on. And people would want that, as well as the excitement of when you qualify for Europe, you then get to play a team you haven't played very often. And that's the novelty of it. If you were regularly playing against teams from those countries, it wouldn't be the same excitement as it currently is.
Moving on to you, Martin. I must now apologise, actually, because I bottled trying to pronounce your surname, because last time I pronounced Steve's surname, I got that wrong. So Martin Bahagla. Is it Bahagla? Help me out.
Bahagla,
near enough. That's Bahagla, good. Sorry, Bahagla. So again, apologies for bottling the surname.
I thought you called him Marvin Hagler for a moment there.
That's my
Because I pronounced Steve Cavalier. I gave Steve a very Frenchy sounding name last time. but Martin, coming on to you now, the ticket issue. There's been issues with concession and pricing, with a number of issues with the club, and there seems to have been very little give and take from the club there in terms of the erosion of the concession offers. So just fill us in on the ticketing campaign and what we've had back from the club that we may not know about.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's I think it's fair to say we've had some issues with the ticketing campaign this year as well. So it's all last year. It's an interesting one. So we last if we go back to last summer, I think, to start it all off. When Steve and Rachel were co-chairs, we had a really big it was a huge success actually, because we were able to freeze season ticket prices. So that was fantastic. It was a real, and we played, the Trust played a direct role in that, and with the conversations that in particular Steve and Rachel had with the club. So it was a great achievement. So we started the season actually in a really good position with season ticket prices being frozen, and then we moved on. And then all of a sudden the cost of general admission tickets were increased, and the club announced that. And I think at the time, there was talk of a consultation, but it didn't really happen. It was more we were told these ticket prices are going to be increased, I think our ticketing guys from the Trust Board met the ticketing guys from the club and were told it wasn't a consultation as such. So that led to our ticketing campaign. So we launched a ticketing campaign where we were effectively saying, look, enough's enough. You can't keep taking from hardworking supporters. We're in the middle of a cost of living crisis. And we as a board met and we discussed thoroughly how this campaign could work. And off we went with it. And the first, we held a demonstration against Manchester United. Sorry, not against Manchester, for the Manchester United game, we held a demonstration, we held a demonstration before the Manchester United game, which was really well attended. It was a really successful event. And a lot of people were stirred by it, and we were really pleased. And at that point, the club appeared to start talking to us, or an olive branch was offered. And there was talk of this ticketing review that the club has now introduced. We went to the fan forum night where Daniel Levy announced plans for the ticketing review. And obviously, as a trust, we felt it was imperative that we played a part in that. We reached out to the club and we were invited. We had a meeting, and I'll talk about our meetings later. We had myself and Michael, our vice chair, had a meeting with Donna Cullen, the club's executive director, and we were invited to be play a part in that review, which we are. So we've got our fan advisory board members and the fan advisory board playing a part in the ticketing review, as well as our ticketing, our trust ticketing leads playing a part in that ticketing review. So we took a decision. We were much.
He's back.
Bad timing.
There's a quick in and out there. He's back.
Oh, well, I don't know what happened there. I just popped out.
All right. Happens.
Someone at the club was pressing.
Yes, Donna Cullen's onto us.
Kick him out. So, yeah, we took a decision that we were better. Now, that coincided at the time we were, just before that, we also had planned a demonstration for the Sheffield United game, and which everything was geared up towards. In exactly the same way as the Manchester United game. But it just, unfortunately, we had a board member who just had surgery. We had a board member who'd been ill. Well, actually, we had another board member who was ill as well. And I was actually going to the game. I remember being on the train and we were like, I'm going to meet you there in half an hour, bring the banners and all that kind of talk. And it was all on. And then for one reason or another, we just couldn't get the banners to the ground due to sickness. And I was actually there. Rachel was there. I think we were talking to fans, just to supporters and members who'd come just to say, look, it's not going to happen today. Unfortunately, we couldn't arrange it. And I think that's been probably, it was a real disappointment for us. And we still face criticism on social media for that. And we understand that that's going to happen. Every time we tweet anything, there's always, but are you going to turn up to your own protest? And we're like, yeah. But it's one of those things, and unfortunately, it's looking back. If I had that time again, we'd call it in that week, because it became apparent we were low on numbers with volunteers, we were low on numbers with trust board members, and we should have just binned it. But we wanted to do it, and of course, it led to people assuming that we'd been, we decided after a conversation with the club we weren't going to do anymore. It wasn't anything like that. It was just that logistically we just couldn't do it. And we didn't have the time to put anything out. So it was a real disappointment. We then followed that up at the Fulham game. This was a real success. We met the Fulham Supporters Trust in the Antwerp Arms, who'd had similar issues with their club over their £3,000 season ticket prices in their new stand, which is ridiculous. So we met with Fulham. We had a demonstration outside the Antwerp Arms with banners. We invited members to come along and join us on that. We supported Fulham. They supported us. And it was nice to see Trust working together. Since then, we're now involved in the ticketing review. So we're still aware. We're still in conversation with our members. We're still in conversation with those who've struggled to cut to attend games due to the cost of general admission prices. And we still want to hear from those people. But we're also involved in this ticketing review, and we're involved in more meetings with the club on ticketing as well. So it's one of those where we're looking to try and build a relationship where we can have a direct impact on any changes that the club make towards reductions for ticketing, in the same way we were able to reduce season ticket prices. In the same way we were able to freeze season ticket prices in the summer. And it's a conscious decision we've made that we just think by being in the room and having those conversations, we're better placed. That doesn't mean the campaign's not ongoing. The campaign continues. Just at the moment, we're just in conversation with the club on a number of issues. So when the time's right, we will look to encourage members to support us again. And we've got events coming up where members can do that. So that was the ticketing campaign, and that really ties in a number of issues, whether it be the season ticket pricing freeze and also the erosion of concessionary areas.
That's it. That's what I wanted to go into about the concession erosion, because that was the one thing that got to me. Can you go into a bit more about what the club did in changing the concession allowance and the position of the concession seats and the impact that had on supporters?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that directly affected me, actually, because I used to go to games with my father-in-law at White Hart Lane, and we also went to games together at Wembley. And I think he found... So when we went to the new stadium, my sons and I... So I've got three sons and two season ticket holders, one's a member. He's working his way up the waiting list. my boys wanted to go in the south stand, so that's what we did. And we initially, as everyone, we weren't sure if my father-in-law could join us in the south stand with a concession, and he couldn't. He needed to go into a concessionary area, so it was a disappointment. He just stopped going, and now he's not interested in coming back really. So it's one of those where he would have joined us if he could have, but he couldn't get the concession in the right area, and we could have gone to the family stand. And my children now are both young adults, but I had to pay a young adult price for them to be in the South Stand with me because there's no juniors in there as well. So, and lucky I was in a position where I was able to do that, but not everybody is. And it's, you know, it's not ideal for me either. But we didn't want to go in the family stand. They wanted to be where the atmosphere was. And of course, you know, this is where we've said that the concession should be tied to the person, not the seat, because that any person of any age should be able to sit in that stadium with their families, wherever they want to sit, and they should pay the appropriate price. If you're a junior, you should be able to go in the South Stand or in the, you know, the East, the West, East, North, wherever, and sit and pay the right price. They do it for cup games. You know, Burnley, you could sit anywhere for £10. So I don't see why you can't do that for us. So that's one of the things we've been discussing with the club and looking at ways that we can improve the concessionary offer to all supporters, because at the moment it doesn't really work. And I think that, you know, there's a general understanding that it doesn't really work.
What did the club say, though? Is it a financial thing? What's in it for them, I guess? Because, like you said, your dad cannot now go or does not want to go because of the arrangements for concessions. What did the club say when it's raised? What's in it for them? Is it financial? I'm just confused about why they would not do this. Why they would not want to keep their fans to go year after year, game after game, happy. It just baffles me.
It is. And from our point of view, the most important thing, like, I actually joined the trust board because I had then, sadly, three young sons, two of them a bit older now. But it was important to me to see the club encouraging the next generation of Spurs supporters. That's why I joined the trust, and that's why I became a board member. So, look, if you ask me personally, why don't the club offer concessionary areas and all concessionary seats in all areas of the stadium? It has to be financial. I can't see any other reason why. They argue that there are concessionary areas in certain areas, in all parts of the stadium. And, you know, for example, you've got a safe standing stand in the South Stand, so whether or not junior members can go in there. When my 19-year-old son can't come, we swap the ticket to my 11-year-old son's membership. He comes and stands in the South Stand and he's absolutely fine. So that argument doesn't seem to stack up. I think a lot of people would say, particularly for 60 over 65s, for pensioners, there is a real lack of seats available to them at what we would consider the right price. And when I used to go to White Hart Lane when I was a member and I used to purchase tickets, I never had any problem buying two tickets for my children and a ticket for my father-in-law and myself at the correct areas. And we'd always sit in the stands that we wanted to sit in a 36,000 seat stadium. I know we've got more season ticket holders, but I can't believe in this stadium we can't offer that to supporters. It's and that's one thing that is disappointing, I think. And I think if there's one thing I personally would implore the club to look at, it would be helping supporters, particularly those who've given the club 40, 50 years of loyal support and are now in this amazing stadium playing absolutely incredible football. Let them see it, because it's a lot of supporters who are pensioners can't afford it, and that's wrong, and they should be allowed. And they're the ones who've been there through, you know, those dark days in the 90s and some in the 70s, and they should be allowed to pay the right amount, the correct amount, for them to watch a football match.
Absolutely.
I'm Alex Rodriguez,
and I'm Jason Kelly
from Bloomberg. This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You know, just for me, it's something personal as well. I first went to Tottenham games with an elderly couple. My dad's not interested in football. He plays chess. So one Christmas when I was 13, I think 13 or 12, they got me a ticket, a junior ticket to go with an elderly couple. This is how old they were. They were the parents of people that my parents played bridge with, long since passed away, but just the love, Tottenham through and through. Have been going since the 50s. I mean, this is the 90s. So for me, just to know that those people that showed me, that made me fall in love with Tottenham, have issues get into the games. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. I'm wary of time. So let's but this, I guess, moves on to our next point, Rachel, is the atmosphere initiatives. Because this obviously does affect an atmosphere. So what's going on there?
Yeah, well, I expect you know, Bren, we do a survey every year, and it's a very well-received survey. We get a big response, normally between 5,000 and 6,000 people answer. And the biggest change in the data that we got last year was basically about atmosphere, how happy you were with the team and everything else. And in actual fact, 26% of the people who responded said that they were happy with the atmosphere at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I mean, that is really pathetic, isn't it? I think it was quite high, actually, considering what was going on at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But a quarter of the people actually were happy. And the club approached us and said, would we like to get involved with an atmosphere initiative? And of course, I said, yes, absolutely. And so Simon, who's no longer on the board, but Simon Sullivan and I went and joined a meeting along with some other fan group representation, including the Return of the Shelf, Proud Lily Whites, and various other people who'd been doing work with the club, so that we could basically have a sharing of ideas. And they sort of asked us to talk about the best atmosphere we'd ever been in a sporting arena, and to describe that. And they said it could be even in a concert. It doesn't have to be a Spurs match. And I talked about when I was at Boca Juniors over in Argentina, and the way the crowd was organized, it was military precision, and it was almost scary, but it was not scary. It was absolutely exhilarating. But we talked about all the things that we'd love to see. But ultimately, if the team are playing the sort of football that we were playing last season, nothing you do is going to create a great atmosphere. It's got to be with beautiful football. So we were quite sceptical about all the things that they were asking us about. You know, what's your favourite walking out music? What do you think about flags? What do you think about the return of a drum? Etc. And we were sort of like, yeah, but it's the football and it's who you've got in the stadium and where. So we were sort of saying things like, let's have more safe standing in the south stand, which they've done, which is great. We also said that strip of hospitality across the middle doesn't help. That's not good. Nothing's ever going to change there. But we basically gave our ideas, and then they went away. And they were very, I have to say, it was a very impressive young man who was hosting the event. And they came back and they basically sort of shared with us what they'd come up with. And some of the ideas, I think we thought was, oh, my God, that sounds a bit, you know, potentially hugely embarrassing, you know, a trumpet doing when the Spurs, when I think there was quite a lot of scepticism. But
what's it like there, though? Sorry, about the trumpet specifically, because I hear it on TV. What's it like?
It's fantastic. Oh, I like it. What do you think?
I don't, because it's all, sorry, you're asking these guys.
No, I was going to say, I was sceptical. When Rachel messaged and said they're thinking of having a trumpeter playing Owen the Spurs, I just wanted Duel of Fate, so like the good old 90s. I'm just the 90s guys. I bring back to the 90s. And I was like, oh, that's never going to work. People are just going to, you know, take piss and whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think it's brilliant. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And when I hear it, it's nice. It gives you, I think it has improved. And it leads, I've always liked grounds where they sing, like Sheffield United and Forest. I can't remember the song. I know the songs they sing, they've gone out of my head. But the songs they sing before the game, they play loudly and then they cut it just as kickoff comes. Yeah, I know the Sheffield ones about the good old
Greasy Chip Butty. But I think Forest is Mull of Kintyre. We don't have anything to do with that. But that'd be terrible.
But they cut it and the crowd then sing it. And we've got now with our trumpet.
That's what the trumpet goes.
And we go into kickoff singing Owen the Spurs, and it's loud. So I think it's been a big success. And it just shows sometimes the ideas are not something always that you'd agree with.
Yeah.
But you see what it's like, you give it a chance, and actually it's worked out quite well.
But I do think they're bringing a greater number. So you've got standing at the back of the south stand now as well. So it is, you know, it's a really impressive wall of sound that comes from the south stand. The music at the end is amazing, and you can tell that the players love it as well. And they're all dancing, and you know, it is honestly, I can't wait for you to come back and see it this season, because, and hopefully we'll win, because it is amazing. It's absolutely fantastic.
But I'm very pleased we've stuck with McNamara's band at the start of the second half, which I think is very important. You can't get rid of McNamara's band, that's got to stay. And of course, there is a link here as well with what we've been discussing around ticket pricing. And, people who come as a one-off, as tourists to watch the club, are obviously very welcome. And they're part of the Spurs fan base, and they're part of, people who are attending the stadium and giving their money to the club and their support to the club. But there needs to be that hardcore of sufficient people who are absolutely passionate and want to display their passion through singing and chanting and so forth. And if you lose that as a significant proportion of the stadium, then it does have an impact on the whole atmosphere and therefore on the team and how people feel about their experience at the stadium as well.
Yeah. But of course, it's an absolute open door, isn't it? Because the football is so fantastic this season, and Ange is so great at understanding the importance of fans. And Swanee is such a fantastic captain in terms of, you know, the togetherness, and, you know, he tells them, I think everything Sonny does is brilliant, but, you know, he that first game where he got the team huddle over by the away supporters at Brentford, that was the mark on the door. This is, you know, he's a proper leader, and things are going to change. And I think so much of it comes from the Ange Sonny axis.
Yeah, no, Ange has been, it's just transformed things so quickly. It's been beautiful, even from afar, to see. I can't wait to go, even from out here. The Brazil Spurs guys were very, very sceptical. They're like, who is this guy? And I was like, just wait. And they very, very quickly changed their tune. What he's done, it's magic. It really is. But sticking with you, Rachel, the in-person events for the Supporters Trust. So I know you have a really incredible event coming up with three of the best Spurs journalists out there. So we've got Charlie Eccleshare, Alistair Gold.
It's four, actually. Yeah.
Four? Wow.
Four. Yes, we're really excited about this. It's on the 24th of January. I mean, it's sold out within an hour of the tickets going on sale. We've got Charlie Eccleshare, who's from The Athletic, View from the Lane. He's, he's such a fantastic journalist. Alistair Gold, who I don't know about you, but I've sort of followed Alistair since his Spurs community days, you know, decades ago. And he's just, he just knows everything that's going on at Spurs. He's such a nice guy as well. Dan Kilpatrick from the Evening Standard. He covers all the Spurs. And Michael Bridge from Sky Sports. Oh. So it's a really fantastic range of journalists. It is sold out. It's in a pub in City Road, and very, very much looking forward to that. But what we are inviting everyone to do is, because it's a Q&A, if anyone has any questions that they'd like to ask of those journalists, if they could email them to us at info@thstofficial.com, then we'll be gathering some of those together, and we'll be asking some of them on behalf of members and supporters, if they just like to tell us who they are and what their question is. So, and then we'll obviously be sharing some of the answers afterwards. So, yeah, that would be great. We have our AGM coming up on the 19th of February. It's always lovely to meet all our enthusiastic members who come to those events. And we're really grateful because we get a really good turnout. And that's our opportunity to share with them the work that we've done over the year, to take their feedback, to think about the year ahead, and to obviously elect our members, our board members rather. And we've also got a quiz night coming up in April. We'll be sending out details about that. And we always have a Spurs team at that, with the Spurs staff, which is, you know, fantastic, at the Antwerp Arms. And Ledley is the captain.
Love him.
And that's another great night to look forward to in April. I think it's, is it the 19th?
17th, I think.
17th, thank you, Steve. And then we'll also be having the summer barbecue, which I know you came to last year. And that's great fun. And we always have a Spurs legend or two. We had Mickey Hazard and Pat Jennings last time. And we've got that penciled in for the end of May. But again, we'll be confirming nearer the time.
Wonderful, yeah, wonderful. Lots happening. Yeah, no, it's great. The barbecue, seriously, to anyone listening, the barbecue is well worth the visit. Really good to just meet Spurs fans. And as you said, the legends as well. It's good for a good cause as well. There's the raffle. I won some excellent stickers. I didn't get the signed shirt, but I got some stickers, which my kids have decorated their room with. So yeah, the barbecue is great fun, and as will the evening with the journalists, the AGM, and the quiz night. I think there's the quiz night. Did you mention already? Sorry, or did I?
Yes, we've got the quiz night in April. Yeah. Perfect. Of course, we also get Tim Winston from Spurs Song Sheets has sung at our barbecue for the last 2 years as well, which has been really great.
He was brilliant. And bless him. I think he had a sore throat. He was a bit sick when he came last time. He still gave it his all. It was a great season pro. So officers and THFC meetings for you, Martin. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, this one won't take too long. Just really an update on what we do with the club. We're now with the fan advisory board. We look to have two meetings a year with the club directly with usually Donna Kine, the executive director. I think if you go back a fair few years, we used to have these board to board meetings. So we would take five or six of our board and meet the like Daniel Lee would be there, Donna, sometimes would be the head of ticketing, head of comms and other people. And, we'd have these meetings. I think after COVID sort of led to their demise, really, it just stopped. So we're in the process of reinventing those meetings, really, and looking at what we can do. So we had a meeting not too long ago, again, myself, Michael, our vice chair, went and had a meeting with Donna and Levi, the then supporting liaison officer at the club. So looking to reinvigorate those meetings, really, and that led to us being on the ticketing review. So that was the first step. So we're looking at always penciling in at least a couple of meetings a year with the club. And what we would say to members as well is always, as Rachel said at the AGM, we'll have members who will come and will tell us what they think and what they think our priorities should be for the year. But also to anybody that ever has any ideas or anything they want us to discuss with the club, so just drop us an email at the info account or to find us on Twitter, because we can always take those points directly to the club. Notwithstanding the fact that we'll always get ticketing issues or stadium issues or catering issues that we deal with, but the more fundamental issues that sometimes people deal with, like we were talking about earlier, concessionary issues or people who are trying to change seats and can't. Just those, the kind of sometimes the issues that you just want somebody to have a conversation with the club for you. So it's really important, really, that we continue to have that feedback from our membership, because we rely on that, really, to know as almost a finger in the air where we are with the club and how our members and Spurs supporters generally feel that relationship is. But we'll get a lot of that feedback at our AGM. But my view here is just to say to people, always continue to seek us out and tell us, what's going on, what you're feeling, what any issues you're having with the club, because we can certainly try and help. And with our officers, it's just we've got our board now. We've got a chair. We've got two FAB members. We've got a vice chair, a treasurer, and a secretary. We'll be at our AGM. We'll be electing potentially a new secretary and others. So it's if people are interested in joining the board, now's the time to do it, because you can nominate now to be voted, to be elected onto our board. And if people are interested, then please give it some thought. We always welcome, new people bring a new skills, but also a new outlook. And we welcome that, because I think, I've been on the board. God, Rachel, how long have we been on the board for now? I can't remember. Is it 9 years?
I just suddenly had that gif of Lady from Titanic going, it's been 84 years.
I think it's 10, actually. I think I joined in 2014.
That's a lot.
I think it's 9 or 10 years. Rachel and I joined in the same year, so it's 2014 and 2015. And do you know, it's very hard work sometimes, but it's also very rewarding because you're doing it for a club. We only, and I always say this, and now as chair, I guess I feel I should say it more, because I think sometimes... I worked, maybe like you, but I used to work in communications and as a newspaper journalist, so I had a newspaper editor. So I've got quite a thick skin. So when people give us a bit of stick, I'm not easily offended. But it doesn't mean that it's nice to hear, and it doesn't mean that there are board members that aren't. And, we've seen board members leave because of the toll that this role takes on their mental health. And it's a voluntary role. People don't become board members of the Supporters Trust because they don't care. They become board members because they love Tottenham Hotspur and they want to represent supporters and do their very best. And they love fellow Tottenham supporters. You know, that's the basis. We've all got daytime jobs. We've all got other things that we're doing. People who've retired and could go and probably enjoy their retirements more easily if they weren't board members of the Spurs Supporters Trust. But we do it because we care, and there's a purpose in what we do. And that doesn't mean we always get everything right. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be criticised when we get things wrong. You know, the ticketing campaign demonstration for Sheffield United is something we absolutely should be criticised for. But I think there comes a time where some of the abuse, particularly, I have to say, at our female board members, sometimes crosses a line. It's not nice.
Absolutely.
And shines a horrible light on the mindset of some people. And I think I'd hope that people would have a look at that and think how they reflect themselves and their views. But that's it. But on the plus side, if anybody wants to join us, please come and join us. We need more members. We need more board members. We need more members. We need more of everything. So come along and throw your weight behind us. You'll be gratefully received.
So to become a board member, to become a trust member even, is it the website? Visit you on the socials?
You can go onto our website and it's thstofficial.com. There's a join here. You can join for free. You can pay if you want to. Obviously, the money we generate, we use for supporters. You know, it all goes towards our cause. And if anybody wants to stand as a board member, they need to be a full member of our Supporters Trust, but they can nominate themselves or they can have someone nominate them and seek election and join us. You know, we all went through that process and here we are. We'd love to see some new faces.
Absolutely. No, like I said, I'm with you. Like I only really joined Twitter after joining the podcast and I've seen some of the things that get thrown around towards the trust. It just makes me sick, and like you said, it's usually towards the female members, which says a lot about Twitter. And I don't think it's particularly a Spurs thing. I just think it's a Twitter thing. I just think that the idiots are on Twitter, and some of those idiots might follow Tottenham, and they're not true fans. They don't know that you guys volunteer. You're not getting paid for this. You're not on the club's payroll. You're not. All those accusations that you guys get, and some podcasts, including us, get.
We get Levy's biscuits.
Levy's biscuits. Best biscuits in the world.
I have had a biscuit at a board to board meeting, and I have to say it was a McVitie's digestive. So there's nothing special there in the biscuit jar. So I don't know what people are seeing with you, but no, thank you, Brendan. And I think those that criticise and, as you say, seek out in particular our female members, you know, that I'd like to see them, you know, get in a room and discuss tactics, football, knowledge, whatever, because I know who'd come out on top if that's their concern.
Yeah, no, but I think the vast majority, vast majority of Spurs fans are behind the trust and appreciate the work you guys do. We're fortunate to have you guys fighting our cause, and like I said, it's unpaid. You guys volunteer. You're doing it because you love the club, you love supporters' issues and concerns, and so yeah, we're behind you. Couple of other items to tie up before we go on to. We'll do a good sort of 10 minutes just talking about how Spurs are right now. But catering, Rachel, the return of the bagel. Tell us about it.
Oh yes, I mean, I did feel if I left the trust at that moment, my work was done. The bagel to me is part of Tottenham's heritage. It's a bit like Steve was saying about McNamara's band. You know, Spurs have always been associated with, the man selling smoked salmon bagels from his basket on the concourses. And when I used to, when we first moved to the new stadium, Daniel Levy asked me as the person dealing with catering at the Trust to do regular questionnaires and to meet with the catering team to get it right, to make sure the pricing was right. And he was very open, actually, to having low prices, particularly the first season, to get everyone used to coming in. One of the things, well, yes, quite, because habits, once they're set, are hard to break, aren't they? But I was really, really keen and kept advocating for the bagel. Because actually, yes, we all like, you know, most supporters want to have sausage rolls, good sausage rolls, pies, and sort of traditional football food. And that's got to be available everywhere, obviously, and good beer served quickly at an affordable price. But the bagel is important, and it's also important to have some options that are relatively healthy. Mm-hmm. And I kept getting told, oh, we've tried selling bagels, nobody buys them. And I said, I actively want the bagel. I cannot find them. I have never, ever seen one being sold anywhere. Where were they? And somebody was wondering about, were they? Well, I didn't see any. Anyway, so when we went for our catering meeting in the closed season, a delegation of us went and to see the new menu and to give feedback. And they said, you'll be delighted to know that we are trialling the bagel in one outlet to see if you're right and to see if we can sell them. They sell out every time. They're on the corner of the West and South Stand by 101. And there's three bagels. They are full of proper food, you know, really fresh, well-sourced food. They feel healthy. They're competitively priced, let's say, the same as sort of you'd get at Pret, that kind of price. Mm-hmm. And it's been such a success, they've now opened up a second outlet, a second place where they're selling bagels as well. So I'm really pleased about that. And the other thing that we as a trust lobbied for was much greater use of the South Stand podium square outside the stand. So basically, when you come in, there's an area outside the marketplace, which is, you know, it was standing there empty. And now it's being used, as we've lobbied for all sorts of things. It's got independent bars, food, chill activities for children, all sorts of things.
So this is outside the actual stadium bowl, like the steps, I guess, sort of going up to the...
Yes, you go through the turnstiles. Turnstiles, yes, they are turnstiles. And then there's an outdoor space. You can't get to it if you're in the north stand, but for the south and west, and I think some of the east, you can get there. And it's, you know, basically it's outdoors, so you can watch matches if there's a game going on before yours. They sometimes have music. You know, it's just such a great use of space. And also it's nice to be outside. So hats off to them. They listened on that one.
I do that every game, Rachel, now. We're South Stand season ticket holders, 257. Every game at half time, we go out, you tap out, so you get your wallet, tap out the turnstile, go out. They're all there and get a pint, get some food, and get back in. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And there's a variety of food. And the gherkins are, the bagels with the gherkins are amazing. That's my pre-made, the salt beef and gherkin bagel for the game. And then the chicken outside at half time or at full time. It's my really healthy diet, I know, but it's with a few pints of neck oil washed in. But it's good.
Oh, I can't wait to come back. I miss it. I miss it so much. and to wrap up the trust the points, heritage items, Steve.
It's worth saying, regrettably, Brendan, given the title of your podcast, there's still no sign of a cheese room, I'm afraid. So
we're the only one. We're happy to be the one.
um, And actually, one thing that often occurs to me is in terms of improvements that could be made in the stadium, going slightly off message here, is obviously they announced before kickoff of the first half, you know, that it's going to kick off in a certain number of minutes. They never do that before the start of the second half. Now, I appreciate there are issues around what time the teams are coming out, but they must be aware. And I think it would be helpful if people be alerted, you know, 3 minutes or so before the second half's going to kick off, so people are aware to get back in their seats, or, you know, that they don't need to get back in their seats until they've been given that alert. And that's something I think we have raised and will raise again.
That's a good one.
Just on the heritage items, I mean, firstly, the heritage trail I would definitely recommend to people. Now, this was something that was really pioneered by our trust colleagues, Pete Hayne and Rob White, and the club has now picked up on this, and there's now it's a self-guided heritage tour of various sites connected with the club around and about the high road. You can do it through the app, and I certainly would encourage people to do that. It's well worth doing. And we're hoping that as part of that, the club is talking about, and you'll have seen in the fan advisory board minutes, about installing the Bill Nicholson gates, hopefully in a permanent site somewhere prominent by the stadium. That's still under discussion. And we've said very strongly as a trust and as a fan advisory board that we would want that to include, because these are the gates with Bill Nicholson looking through in that famous photo. And we very much want there to be a statue of Bill Nick looking through the gates as part of that, as a feature, not just the gates in isolation, but with a statue of Bill Nick. And that, we've made that point very clearly to the club. And what we'd also like to see is a permanent museum, is a museum in the stadium. It was something that's been discussed. Again, Pete Hayne, Rob White, very involved in this, in discussions with the club. And many of us would have been to museums or other stadia. I was on holiday a few months ago back in Bilbao, and the Athletic Bilbao stadium has got a fantastic museum.
Is there not one? I thought there was one.
No,
sorry.
There isn't. And, you know, we've got such a proud history, so much to share, so many articles and memorabilia and trophies and other things that can be shared in a museum. It was a bit disappointing at the fan advisory board meeting that the club was talking about rotating exhibits and not a permanent location. Now, whilst we accept that you can rotate some exhibits when you've got so much that you can show and display, we do think there needs to be a permanent site for the museum with a permanent display and some rotating exhibits. And we're going to carry on pushing that because we think, you know, we're a proud club with a proud heritage, a proud history, as well as an exciting present. And we think all of that should be properly commemorated. And it brings people to the stadium, you know, and it's of value to the club and the community, we would say.
Because I've done the tour of the previous and the new stadiums, and they kind of take you through where they have the trophies and stuff. And I just assumed that they got the museum sort of bit as part of the tours, but it's not a museum. It's just where they display the trophies and the call the triangle things. The flat,
the pennants.
Pennants. Thank you, Jesus.
There was talk, wasn't there? There was going to be above the when you went through the club shop when it first opened. There was going to be like a museum area, where we all thought it was going to be. So it's frustrating because, as Steve says, it's a club of Tottenham Hotspur's side, you know, first British club to win a European trophy, 8 FA Cups, first English club to win the domestic double in the 20th century. There's so much to be proud of, and you know, it'd be nice to educate certain other supporters as to the history of Tottenham Hotspur, particularly and those that think football began in 1992. It'd be nice to illustrate that it began long before that. So it'd be lovely to do that.
It's a little bit about people like Bob Buckle and Walter Tull, like these pioneers that are part of our fabric, part of the lifeblood of who we are. Like, and so people come and they won't know. We need to know. We need to preserve this. So I'm amazed. I just assumed that there was one because with the new stadium and stuff, I thought the museum was a paramount part of the stadium.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it could be called, and if you know your history. I mean, it's
exactly
it's there.
Well, we've been over an hour and a half, so let's talk a bit about how things are going right now. As I said at the beginning, there is kind of a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling about the club, which I'm loving, even from out here, even from over here, where I'm just catching the games on TV, but I'm obviously connected doing the podcast and things like that. That that Ange has just, he's brought something so special, and it, the contrast to where we were 6 months, a year ago, Rachel, it's it really is. I'm loving it. I really feel like it is almost beyond the Poch eras for me, and we've not even started.
Yeah, it's quite phenomenal, really, how quickly Ange got his ethos across to the players. I think we were all amazed. You know, we even saw it really on the pre-season tour. We started to see the difference. And you could also see that all the players they've bought into it. We know that people want to come to the club because they've spoken to Ange and they've seen what Ange is about. You know, I think it was the James Maddison interviews when he joined. And I thought if someone of his, because I've always really rated him, and I thought if someone of his calibre is really excited to be coming here because of our manager, then that is an entirely good thing. But he's a proper leader with a proper vision that is non-negotiable, that everyone has to buy into, including Daniel Levy. I mean, look at the transfer business that we've been already doing. And I think a lot of us feel like, you know, for example, with Timo Werner, you know, it's a little bit sort of interesting. I mean, it's January, so we know, you know, we're not going to be signing, a Harry Kane equivalent. But there's a feeling that, well, if Ange wants him, then we can just relax. We know that this is going to be good. We know Dragosin, has that actually happened yet? But I think he didn't have his medical today. You know, he's chosen us really because of Ange over Bayern Munich. This is fantastic stuff. And everything that comes out of his mouth, apart from maybe the bit of the word that I won't say, that he used last week.
It means something else in Australia. We'll give him that. It's something different in Australia.
It does indeed. But, you know, on every subject, not just football, on life, on knife crime, on absolutely everything, we as supporters, I feel, can relax into the sort of the Spurs family again. It really does feel that we're all aligned again. And long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, I've not been to a game yet with Ange, but we spoke about this earlier about the atmosphere. Like, because what was stark for me was the Chelsea game, was the fact that we lost 4-2. Was it 4-2 or 4-1?
4-1.
4-1, 4-1. But at the end, everyone was cheering. And I was just like, I've never seen that before. Just the atmosphere that he's brought inside the stadium as well. It looks transformative.
Yeah, no, I think it is that whole cultural change that Rachel spoke about, which is with the players, but with everybody involved with the club, that we all feel much more positive about it because we're playing positive football when on the front foot. We're actually playing with the ball rather than without the ball, which was, not just sitting back. We, you know, had a succession of defensive managers who didn't seem to be able to construct teams that could hold on to a lead, which seemed a bit of a contradiction in terms. And I think we see that, Ange's view appears to be you go ahead, you keep pressing to go further ahead, which as a Spurs supporter is obviously a rather sensible thing to do, given some of the leads we have conceded in the past. But and it is a much more positive atmosphere. You can see, as Rachel says, that the players are bought into it and enjoy it. There's a camaraderie and a solidarity amongst them. They fight for each other. The players who've come in, I think, have done an excellent job in difficult circumstances. They don't always get a lot of credit, but I think Ben Davis in particular has been absolutely fantastic at the back, a real leader, you know, really intelligent footballer, you know, holding things together there when we were very depleted in defence. I think we're all big fans of Vicario in goal, who I think has been fantastic and, again, is a great organiser. And then the Rachel's mug. I hope Sonny's not watching and thinks you're being disloyal, Rachel. I hope Sonny is watching, actually, but I hope he doesn't think you're being disloyal. And then, you know, Destiny Udogi has just been fantastic. And again, the maturity that he shows and ability as well. And yeah, I mean, it just is that positivity and going into games trying to win, trying to play attractive football. And clearly, the aim is to sign players who fit with that system. And look, you know, Ange comes across as a nice bloke, but you don't get to where he is without being ruthless as well. Like a lot of people, I shamefully didn't know as much about him as I should have done when he came to the club. But I've got several mates who are Celtic fans, and they were saying, you know, you will love him. He gets it. He gets what the supporters want. He gets the connection with the club. I mean, you think of a club, huge club like Celtic, and the importance of that club to its fan base and its community. And he got all of that. And, you know, he's also brilliant, isn't he? And he's put down to journalists, with all due respect to any journalists on this call. And he can use the word mate both as a term of endearment and a threat, which is quite impressive as well, isn't it? So, I don't think we're going to keep cheering if we lose all our games 4-1. Let's be realistic. But, we do want to win. But we want to win in an attractive way. And I think that's what we're seeing at the moment, and a great deal of positivities go with it.
And Martin, we saw recently in his interview with a pre-Burnley game, when a journo who clearly hadn't done his homework asked him, oh, can you picture yourself winning trophies? and obviously he answered back in a, I think he answered back in the right way. He put the guy in his place, but wasn't rude. I thought he dealt with it very well. Do you think, what do you think he can achieve with us? Do you think he can bring those trophies to Tottenham?
Oh, absolutely. I think Steve's point for me is key, is he gets it. And and I think the connection with we had this connection with the Pochettino team. Because, you know, forget where he is now. I've still got respect for Maurizio Pochettino. Maurizio Pochettino and Ange Postecoglou are people that should manage Tottenham Hotspur. They've got the right mentality and the right approach and the right principles. Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte were never the correct people for the job. And I wasn't a fan of either. At any point, even when Conte was winning, I didn't want him at our club because, for me, the football principles were wrong. One of my biggest hates is when people would say, oh, the Spurs crowd, they're a bit hard if you're not winning, you know, because they demand you play football the right way, as if that's the wrong thing. You know, when managers want to play football the right way, that's great. That's down to their principles. And when supporters want it, it's seen as like, you know, you're asking too much. That's what we've been brought up on. So, A, he gets that. And the connection is from us to a human being who we see gets us. And that's so important. That's where the connection comes from. Not with some manager who's acting like he's doing us a favour on £13.5 million a year. Don't get me started. So for me, another thing for Ange, and I've said this for years, I used to coach a kids football team. Nowhere near, you know, I'm not qualified to tell football managers how they should and shouldn't do their job. But one thing I do know is when we had players who were being selected for trials at football teams, they were very, very good. And then they came back to us when they didn't get in. If you're a Premier League footballer and you are a very, very good footballer, physically and mentally, there are no footballers in the Premier League who have mental issues that in terms of being able to cope with the demands of the game. They might have mental issues which can be brought on by managers. They might have a lack of confidence which can be brought on by managers. Ange is one of those who gets the best out of his team. And Antonio and Jose Mourinho, as an example, were the managers who protected themselves. And Ange is protecting his players and they play for him. I've got no doubt. I think, as Rachel and Steve said, Vicario, Udogi, Van de Ven, Romero, all brilliant players. Absolutely phenomenal. I'm not sure they'd be performing as well as they are if they were under Conte right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the case in point on that, Martin, is you look at Yves Bissouma, and you look at Pap Sarr. Where was Pap Sarr last season? He wasn't getting the game. Yeah,
even Romero under Conte. I didn't think Eric Dier was any worse or better than Romero under Conte. So I feel a bit sorry because I was hoping actually he might get a chance. And I think if Van de Ven wasn't injured, Dier would have played with Van de Ven, and we'd have seen that. You know, as Rachel said, Postecoglou is one of those guys. Whoever he wants, you give it to him, because I'd take any player in any footballer because you know he's going to make them better. And there's a great example there for all of us when we're criticising players as supporters. You know, as we saw with Dele Alli, sometimes there's something going on with managers. I so wish Dele Alli was at the club when Andy rolled in, because that would have been phenomenal. And as a prime example, again, you look at managers, in my opinion, who don't do it correctly. Don't want to say too much about him, but Mikel Arteta, he didn't need to sign a David Raya in the summer. You look what it's done to David Raya as a player and Aaron Ramsdale. They were two keepers at the top of their game that are now making mistakes every game. He didn't need to be that way. And that, to me, is a sign of poor management. Mm. And Ange doesn't... all people make mistakes. But at the moment, Ange has shown he will always make the correct decisions in the best interest of the team and not himself. And that's why I think he can achieve anything at this football club, as long as we back him. I'm all aboard the Ange bus. Cannot wait for every game. Can't wait to see Timo Werner tearing it up in the Premier League and proving the point that there are no bad footballers at this level, just mismanaged ones.
Mm. We should be getting players back now. I saw today, it was almost like Christmas today. We had the news that Dragozin had signed or is signing. Madison's back in training next year. Van de Ven's fit. Romero's fighting to be fit for the Man U game. It's just a shame, obviously, a shame, but we've obviously lost Son and Bissouma and Sarr to their national team competitions, which obviously they're very proud and want to represent their country. But it's a shame for Tottenham that's happening. But it's great that we're getting these players back right now.
Yeah.
So, I think just the dream of seeing Bentancur and James Maddison playing in the same team, it just makes me so excited. I just have to contain myself at the thought of, because that to me, we saw the impact of Maddison's injury, and again, bringing in someone in this window perhaps who can step up to the plate when James is out. But as Rachel said, I think we've all seen the player in Maddison. We saw him at Leicester and Norwich and Coventry, and how good he could be. And I think he'll achieve, he'll get to the level we think he can get to at Spurs. And he has to be starting for England on that basis as well, because there's no one who can unlock a defence like James Maddison can.
Yeah, so it's exciting times. What team we have? We're making great signings. So, Rachel, where do you think we will finish this season in the league?
Oh, my God. It's really, really difficult, because we know Man City will go into fifth gear, don't they? They always do at this time of the year. And, definitely top four. I'm going to try and stay feet on the ground, but I think that's being me being calm. I'm going to say fourth, and who knows with the FA Cup? I know we haven't got Sonny, but you know my brother supports Man City. He's absolutely gutted. Who knows?
Steve, where do you think? I'm going third.
I'd agree with Rachel, top four. I think fourth is probably the most likely, given the form of some of the other, or likely form of some of the other teams. But and the FA Cup, yeah, if we do get past City, then, you know, it opens up a bit, doesn't it? I mean, it's a home game. We'll be up for it. It's obviously a difficult game. Would have rather that Gary Mabbutt had pulled out, you know, Maidstone or something, or Eastleigh rather than Man City, but we are where we are. But no, it's positive stuff, and we're going to, you know, clearly Ange is instilling that confidence and belief in the players, and that's what we want. What we want to see.
So we beat Man City, we win the cup. You reckon?
Well, it's certainly. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, Martin, give us a position. Where do you think we'll finish? And FA Cup or no?
I think FA Cup, if I can see us beating City, as Reg said, I've got a friend who I used to work with in London, you know, he's a Man City fan, he's moved back to Manchester and he's coming down. He just sent me a message that I can't repeat when the draw was made, and he was far more pessimistic than I was. So that's a good sign for a start. I think we could go with City, if we beat City, obviously for us to win it, City have to go out, but City and Arsenal out, I fancy our chances against anyone in there, possibly Liverpool away would be the one I wouldn't want. Just because that's a ground that we notoriously lose. But I don't want to say where I think we could finish this season, because I actually, but if we keep Vicario, Romero, Van der Ven, Saar, Maddison, that spine fits for as long as we can, I honestly think this season is reminding me a lot of the season Leicester won. Leicester hadn't established themselves in January. I'm not saying that's us. Leicester hadn't established themselves in January as top of the table. Man City, they've got De Bruyne coming back, Haaland, but they are not. They've showed in the last few weeks they've still got. So I don't think their issues are scoring goals. Their issues are at the back still. And I don't think that's going to change when De Bruyne is back. So we shall see if Pep persists in this weird three at the back formation that he's playing. Arsenal look to me like they've got problems. Liverpool, I don't think, are strong enough in midfield. So I think there's a chance for somebody to come in and win it. I'm not saying it's us. I'll keep repeating that. But I'm saying if we keep everyone fit and we go on a run, I think we're as good as anyone when we've got our strongest 11 out. I really do. I think there's reasons to be very, very optimistic. And I'm sure I will get shot down ruthlessly by Arsenal and some Spurs fans in May when we finish fifth. And they see this, but it'd be nice. But I actually believe that anything is possible with the brand of football and the players that we've got at this club if we continue the way we're playing. I just think this has just shown what can happen when you give players confidence. And they've got the confidence. And I don't see a more confident team than us at the moment in the Premier League.
See, I think in terms of winning the league, I think next season, that's my tip. I reckon next season we will win the league. I've just from what we've seen so far this year, this season, we hadn't had the team, but we've seen with the injuries that we've had and the defeats we've had, we look a bit knackered right now because we've not been able to rotate. I think that will take its toll. It has taken its toll.
But I think our 1-11 can beat anyone on this day. And I think our squad is probably not in the top six. And that's been the issue, and they're clearly trying to rectify that. And that's my point. If everyone has to be fit. What's really inspired me is we're playing Emerson Royal and Ben Davies at centre-back, and we're drawing at Man City, and we're winning games. And I know, if you look at that Chelsea game, it's a real sliding doors moment. If Romero doesn't get sent off, which was a ridiculous challenge, I'm not sure Van de Ven gets injured, as we said, because of the VAR. But also, we probably beat Chelsea. We probably beat Wolves. Probably beat West Ham. And who knows where we'd be right now. And that's the point. We've played Man City away. We played Arsenal away. We've got Old Trafford will be a test on Sunday, as always. But we shall see.
Yeah.
We shall see. But yeah, I'm not saying we're all winning.
Is this going out before or after the Man United game, by the way? If we lose at Old Trafford, can we re-record this bit, if that's okay?
I'm not saying, just to reiterate, I'm not saying we're going to win the league. What I'm saying is, what I love about Ange,
I think you were saying that.
No, I'm saying if we keep everyone fit, but I'm saying there's a chance, because there is a chance, because nobody's grabbing this league by the proverbials, if you like. But also, what I love most about Ange is even if we finish fourth, even if we finish fifth, like Poch, and I don't care where he is, he's got me believing. And that's key for supporters. Believing in your team, and that's where that connection comes from, and where the atmosphere comes from, and where the good feeling comes from. Because he's got us believing that we can achieve something again. And we haven't had that under the two plonkers that I won't mention.
What about you, Ben? Where do you think you'll finish?
So I think this season third, but next season we're winning the league. And if we beat City, we'll win the cup. If we don't, obviously we won't. but yeah, it's just great that we're smiling again. It's just great that we've got a team, like we've all said tonight, that we're behind, that we believe in. The atmosphere is so different. Even in loss, we're cheering the team on. Can you imagine like the injuries that we'd had? Can you imagine them under Conte? Can you imagine the excuses he'd be throwing around and all this? And his face and everything. And Ange just dealt with it like a pro. It was such a good call by the club to get him in. And my Celtic mate's gutted, but he's kind of enjoying it as well. He's an Ange fan as well as a Celtic fan. So he's behind us. And yeah, it's just such a contrast. It's great. So I gave you all homework as well before we wrap up. As this is the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust wrap, as Spotify do their wrap as well of the previous year. So I've all asked you all to tell me your most listened to song of 2023. Hopefully I'll know which ones they are, because if they aren't, then the prize will have to wait until I've listened to the song. But yeah, let's go around the room. So Rachel, what was your most listened to song on Spotify or wherever you get your music? And the winner gets a pair of Havaianas from Brazil.
Nice.
Oh, so mine was Hide and Seek by Stormzy.
Whoa, okay. That is the least I expected from you.
Who's been using your phone?
Wow. So, Steve, can you top Stormzy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you'll have to ask Paul Heaton, because my one is Happy Hour by the House Martins.
Great. Oh, this is tough. Hey, Martin.
I'm not winning this because no one's going to have heard of the band I've been listening to. So I'm surprised, but it's a electropop band called Scavenger Hunt. So none of you will know it, but I would highly recommend them. And it's a song called Till I See a Sign. Very 80s synthesizer. I love all that stuff. Scavenger Hunt, brilliant. Amazing. But I was actually thinking, should I just lie? but I'm not that kind of guy, so I'm not going to do it because I don't think I'm beating Rachel Stormzy anyway, even if I had, because I'm not.
Wow. Well, so I'm going to have to listen to all three songs. So what I'm going to do is, like overnight, I'm going to edit. This will go out tomorrow, but in the comments, like in the description of this podcast, when it goes out, I will state the winner of this competition, and I'll need your shoe size.
It's a data capture exercise then, Brent.
Okay, so guys, it's been an absolute pleasure to hear about everything that the Trust has done this year. As I said, on behalf of Spurs fans, we're so grateful, so lucky to have you guys doing all the hard work you do, volunteering to fight for the causes that matter to Spurs fans. So thank you also. Rachel, thank you for joining tonight.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
Been an honour. Steve, thank you.
Thank you, Brendan. Really enjoyed it. Thanks very much indeed, mate. Martin, in a nice way.
Martin, so it's Martin Bahagia.
That's it. Perfect. Thanks. Really enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun. So thank you very much.
No worries, mate. No worries. So, this will go out. And as ever, come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.